to go in to Stalin and say, by the way, it was a bad idea to take over Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, and also to make war against Finland. Why don't you just give them back and also let the Ukrainians go? Great idea. High chance of success. This is just not going to work. And he is understandably very, very reluctant. But then you get the revelation of the divine name. And it is a third-person version of the traditional divine name, which is transliterated into English, YHWH, which stems from the root of the verb to be. I am who I am suggests much more than it says, but it suggests that God is, in some ultimately unconceivable sense, a personality. It suggests God is the origin of all that is. I am, being, beingness radiates from God. It also suggests a kind of completeness and self-containedness in the sort of mirror-like, self-reflecting structure of the statement. I am who I am. And forgive me, but to defuse something that's got to be in your mind or was in my mind, this has nothing to do with Popeye the Sailor Man, a regrettable parallel, which very seldom fails to come to the mind of contemporary readers, though Popeye is not quite the big deal he was in the 30s or the 40s. In any case, Moses goes in, gives his message, and goes through an elaborate song and dance with the Pharaoh involving the plagues. After some, to me, I don't know whether this is meant to be comic. I kind of doubt it. But sort of sorcery matches between Moses and his brother Aaron and the Pharaoh sorcerers, where they take turns turning sticks into snakes and back and all of this kind of stuff. They're not ready to be convinced. So God sends the sequence of 10 plagues. When I was a little boy, this was the first thing that I wanted to read in the Bible, was the 10 plagues. Somehow the 10 plagues, the plague of gnats, the plague of flies, the locusts. And why would this be a plague? The plague of frogs. I don't know. It just sounded very, very interesting to me. In any case, Pharaoh vacillates. And finally you get what in retrospect becomes the defining ceremonial enactment commemorating this great event, the Passover. And that is, God promises to kill the firstborn of the Egyptians, who are actually thereafter, in some sense, generally supposed to be sanctified to God, and of the Egyptians' cattle, all of their domesticated animals. And the Israelites are supposed to paint in blood over their door something from the Paschal Lamb so that the angel of death will skip over them. That's what happens. That's what the Passover commemorates. And that very night they take off and head into the desert towards Sinai. This is the event right here, right now. This is the event around which Hebrew identity crystallized. The story is, as is very familiar to all, they cross the Red Sea, surrounded by walls of water. Since the evidence suggests, at least to me, that something like that really did happen, I'm loath to believe it's done the way it's done in the Charlton Heston version, with the walls of water standing straight up, sort of like walking through a giant aquarium and looking sideways at the fishes. What archaeologists tend to think is the actual place they walked across is an arm, a northern arm of the Red Sea, not nearly as wide as the Red Sea itself, which is very shallow. The passage itself says that a great wind opened it up. And what I take it happened, and what the text suggests actually happened, is an east wind came up, and in this shallow water, a consistent east wind opened up the mudflats. I used to live myself on the shores of Lake Huron, on a bay which was very shallow, and it would do just that. If the wind held long enough, the water would go out several hundred yards. The Egyptians walk across the mud flats. Pharaoh, with chariots, is in pursuit. A military contingent is in pursuit, and the wind shifts. And they drown in the mud flats. Chariots don't work great, I imagine, in mud flats anyway.